I wanted to share with today some words with this understanding of gain, honor, praise, and fame. So let me share a teaching here. So this is from one of the Buddhist texts, the Anguttara Nikaya, the Book of Fives, Sutta number 30, and I'll read it. May I have nothing to do with honor, Nagita, and honor nothing to do with me. Whoever cannot obtain at will, without difficulty, without trouble, as I do, the pleasure of renunciation, the pleasure of seclusion, the pleasure of peace, the pleasure of self-awakening. Let him consent to this slimy excrement pleasure, this torpor pleasure, this pleasure of gains, offerings, and fame. Now, this piece out of the sutta, this particular teaching, comes from an interaction where the Buddha has been approached by different lay folks. They're bringing a lot of food. So as often in the text, the Buddha's sitting somewhere with the Sangha, camping somewhere outside. I call it camping, they don't call it camping. And they're outside in nature in the elements, and someone in the town nearby hears that this Buddha, this awakened one, is nearby, and word spreads through the town usually, and then a gathering of people come to find the Buddha and his disciples and to ask for teachings, to ask to hear the words of the Dharma so they can awaken to this Dharma and relieve suffering and live a wise life. And so in this instance, the Brahmins, they are called Brahmins in this time. This is a particular class of people during these times that are often affiliated or associated with spiritual leaders at that time. And so a group of them come to the Buddha, finds the Buddha, and comes for a teaching. And they're making a lot of noise outside. And the Buddha describes this noise. He even asks his attendant, Nagita, here, what is this noise? It sounds like a bunch of fishermen catching fish. And the attendant encourages him to respond because they've come with a lot of food and staple food and non-staple food and items. And it seems the Buddha is not that happy on the noise. And so he, after the attendant asks him to teach to them, the Buddha repeats this phrase again, the same exact phrase. He says, may I have nothing to do with honor, Nagita, and honor nothing to do with me. And then as you see, it ends with this slimy excrement pleasure, this torpor pleasure, this pleasure of gains, offerings, and fame. So there's a whole other, like 30 sutras. Sutras are like chapters. Now they're called sutras or suttas. In another book, another text, called the Samyutta Nikaya, on this exact same thing, gain, honor, and praise, where the Buddha is renouncing it. It's an obstruction to practice. It's an obstruction to wisdom. So 30, okay, suttas where, or sutras where the Buddha is just basically calling out, you know, as he said, may fame never find me, may I never find fame. And so it's a really important teaching for us, because the teaching is about what is obstructing us from our liberation. That's what the teaching is. And that these things, these worldly successes that we go after, that we desire and we grasp after and we live our whole lives in pursuit of, that these things are actually the obstructions to our liberation and the liberation of all beings. So it's a really deep teaching, and I guess that's why there's 30 sutras on this teaching. And each sutra gives a little simile or a little story about, it gives a little anecdote or an example so that you can grasp it, you can get it. That's what's beautiful about the teaching. There's so many anecdotes. Sometimes they're interesting because they're from this 2,500 years ago, right? And you might say, what's that got to do with today? But if you listen deeply and you open your mind and heart, you see it. So there's so many of them, but I want to share this one because I think this one is really, it's a little humorous, and it also, I think, in a way makes fun of ourselves. So this one is called a turtle. And this one, for those of you who might be interested, I should write in the chat these. Let's see, I can't find it. I write it after, I can't do many things in the Zoom. I'll lose my place. So I'll do it afterwards. But this one is Samyutta Nikaya, chapter 6, 17, 3. It's the turtle, right? The turtle. So let me write it here. Chapter 6. And the other one is Anguttara Nikaya. Book of 5. Okay. So the turtle, the simile and the turtle. So there's a little turtle who lives with the other big turtles, and other, I'm sure there are other little turtles there too. And the big turtle tells the little turtle, don't go over there into this particular region, because when you go over there, you're going to get hurt. You're going to be fired upon. And so the little turtle says yes. But you know how it goes, little turtles. We've all done it, been there, right? Been there, done it, when we were little turtles. The little turtle, of course, goes over there where little turtle's not supposed to go. And even though the big turtle did tell the little turtle, you'll get hurt if you go there. Don't go there. The little turtle goes there, and unfortunately, the little turtle gets shot at with a harpoon. One of these harpoons that have a cord. And then the little turtle comes back to where the other turtles are. And the big turtle, the adult turtle, says to the little turtle, are you okay? Did you go over there where I told you not to? And the little turtle says, yes, dear one, I did. But nothing happened to me. The only thing that happened is I noticed there's this cord behind me that's following me now. I don't know how it got there. And the adult big turtle says, I see you went over there and now you've been defiled. And now you can no longer be with us. I find that last part to be a bit hard. Right. Yeah, I felt that too. It's like, can't we work with the little turtle? He's just a little turtle, or she's just a little, or they're just a little turtle. We don't have to like kick the poor turtle to the curb because they just didn't listen, right? But that's what's written in the text, so I'm just reporting. And so this it's a really good way to understand this, right? Because the little turtle doesn't even know it's been shot. And I think that's really the beauty of this anecdote is they only know this, there's this cord behind them. They didn't even feel the harpoon that's still there, right? The thing that has attached to them that caused that attachment. And so it's like this with these, the gain of material things, the fame, the praise, we don't know what it does to us. And yet there's something pleasurable about it that keeps us wanting it, going after it. Yeah. And so the teaching is about this disenchantment with success, because it's an obstacle and we don't notice it. And it gets very easy to, because it's pleasurable, to want more of it and to want more of it. And we don't even know what it's doing. You know, it's like, oh, I'm not sure why that rope's there. And then we keep going. And we never think about pulling out the thing that makes us carry this rope behind us. And so this is the teaching, is that we must find peace. We must find solitude. It must become easy for us to find that, so we can notice when we are exposed to the harpoons that gets us attached. And there are several ways that it's suggested. I mean, there's many ways that's suggested to our awakening, but in this particular sutra, there's four ways. The first one is noticing that everything that we consume in ignorance, even though it brings some nourishment, much of it becomes defiled. Meaning, and the example of taking in food, it eventually becomes urine or feces, right? Whatever we drink, whatever we eat. But it's not just the food we consume through the mouth. It's whatever we consume. And the things we consume are books and television programs, people, and pleasures, the pleasures that come from things that we consume. So it's not that we don't consume, it's that we consume with mindfulness. We consume with awareness. We do not consume in the space of ignorance, because that's when things happen. That's when that harpoon hits us and we get caught up in it. And then we want more because it's so pleasurable. And we just keep going for more and more, right? So it's this understanding that if we have peace of mind, if we're able to find stillness in any moment without any difficulty, we'll notice that. Because that spaciousness, that clarity allows us to notice, oh, I'm really grasping after this. And I really like it. Let me just watch how I'm taking pleasure from it and not let myself get overwhelmed with the pleasure and just build more desire, right? So in a way, it's another renunciation, right? So in the BIPOC sit last week, we talked about renunciation, what it means, why we need to renounce. And this is similar, right? Because it's renouncing the pleasurable things that lead us to desire, that lead us to think this is okay, right? And then it builds things in us that's not good for us. We can even become addicted to these things that bring us certain pleasures, right? So it's this continuation of this understanding of this renunciation is not about just putting aside things, but it's looking at how, what's obstructing us from our liberation. And we act in light of that, in heedfulness of that, right? What are we consuming? The other one is understanding that things that the people we love, that they're not going to be there all the time. And so there's a way that we, when we love, we don't want to become attached, because we know even as we love, we will lose those we love, right? It's one of the five remembrances. It's all that we love and hold dear will eventually be gone. And so how do we love with this clear understanding that there will come a time when we will grieve this love? So we, again, we don't take pleasure, blind pleasure, unaware pleasure, that becomes an attachment, such that when we lose that thing we love, that person we love, we really don't know how to recover from it. And these ways of being aware of love, aware in love. Yeah. And the pleasure of that can also, it's a way that brings a lot of gratitude, right? Like we feel so happy for it. We do things for it. We do things that we might not want to do for it, that might bring immediate gratification, that might bring something of note for us. So how do we stay in mindfulness awareness so that that way we love is always in awareness? The other one is being aware of what causes us to become desirable of something. And it's usually something that we call beautiful. So we go after things that we perceive as beautiful, right? This is what leads to loss. And we believe that the thing that's beautiful brings pleasure. And it does, because we bought into it. And so of course it's kind of like food. We get accustomed to a particular taste of food, and then it satiates us. And then now we want that same food. And sometimes if we're not careful, we overeat because it's so yummy, right? And so that pleasure is something that we want to be aware of. Whatever it is that is the satiating part of it, which is usually the beauty of it, the beautiful taste of it, what we call beauty in a person, what makes us attracted to others, that makes us do all kinds of things. I mean, who here hasn't done something, I won't call it crazy, but something that we look back and say, like, wow, I can't believe I did that for that person. Especially if we're in the process of getting to be noticed by the person, right? That we kind of lose our mind. Sometimes we say we fall in love because of something particular about the person. And so being aware that we attach to things that we term as beautiful and we go after it. And in the process of doing that, we really can cause ourselves harm. And so it's so important to be aware of what is something that we perceive as beautiful. Is it really beautiful? Is it what society has colonized us to believe is beautiful that we're going to go after? And it really invites us to pause and breathe and look inside for the beauty that is already here. Because if we're so grounded in the sufficiency of who we are, it's going to really temper how much we go after something that we think is really beautiful. You know, that thing that lurks in our head, if I just get that, I'm good. This will make me whole. This will make me beautiful. This will make me what everyone else wants to be. So this understanding of how do I take care of myself? You know, how do I love myself with like the metta meditation today? How do I forgive myself for harm that I think I've caused or something I haven't done right? And how do I move into love? We can start with like. Sometimes like's harder. And then we move into love of this self. And that solidity, the solidness, the groundedness, the rootingness of being aware of ourselves and being kind to ourselves, it doesn't make us want to seek outside so much for the kindness, for the love, for the all the things that we haven't yet noticed is right here already. As where it's like a cup. If we see ourselves as empty, we keep trying to pour things into it because there's nothing in it, right? But if the cup is full, or it's close to the top, or it's even halfway, we're not going to keep trying to grab something to pour into it and grab something to pour into it because it's already full. In fact, we can offer out from a place of fullness. It's a very different way, and it also it allows what we go after, this the whole gain and fame and pleasure and honor, all the things that we grasp for to fill up our cup, that when we're full, these things, these external accolades and things, they don't it's not that we don't receive them, it's that we receive them differently. If someone says something kind and appreciative, we receive it very differently if we're in a space of emptiness. And when I say empty, I mean feeling not full, not sufficient, than if we are in a place of feeling grounded, right here, right now, present, right? It comes in and it goes out. It doesn't stay. Whereas if we're feeling not purposed, right? Not deserving. When someone says something, we just grab it up. It feels, you know, and all of a sudden now we're worthy of something. Do you see? It's a hindrance to our liberation. And the last one, the fourth, is the understanding of what impermanence is, that everything that we come to rely on, it's kind of like the things we appreciate, that it will change. It's impermanent. You know, the understanding, if we look at the body, that what is there, 45 billion, no, 45 trillion cells in the body. Do we not think that this body is undergoing change every millisecond with that many cells? There's birth and death going on all the time in this body. Just think about it. With that many cells, making up the liver, the heart tissue, the eye tissue, the nerve, the brain, the fingernail, the skin, there's always coming and going in every instance. And so that understanding, we can start right here in this body, just the normal physiology of the body, the biology of this form that we're in. That is our evidence that change is occurring. Nothing stays the same. It's always occurring. And that is not just in this body. It's with every manifestation. And so even though we don't see this thing that we're looking at in front of us changing, there are subatomic particles that are always bouncing off each other, changing all the time. So it's a new thing all the time in front of us, but it happens so fast that we don't notice, right? This whole, I mean, the Buddha has been saying this for 2,500 years, and now quantum physics says, hey, look, we've got some data that shows this to be true. It's beautiful, right? Human beings and science catching up with these deep, deep, profound teachings. Like, how did the Buddha know that? All things are impermanent. Everything is changing right there. We don't see it. It's so fast. And so this understanding of what we cling to, What we desire, what we think is going to be permanent in our lives to make us whole, that this becomes an obstacle for our liberation because we become reliant on it. We look to it. We want fame and glory from it. We want to acquire these things. We want people to tell us how wonderful we are. I mean, we are wonderful. And yet that needs to come first from us. Yes, we need to believe that we're wonderful. So when someone says it, it doesn't become an obstacle to our liberation. That's when it becomes an obstacle to our liberation. When we ourselves don't believe it, and so we crave it from outside, we need it from outside. And then when it's not there, we suffer so much. And then we grieve. And then we don't know how we can even exist anymore. And so these practices, they're foundational, right? They're saying, if we build it inside, if we build this foundation here, sure, we can get gain and fortune and fame, but we won't hold it the same way that people hold and attach to it and even use it to cause harm, use it over others, think they're better than each other because someone said this about them or they have, I don't know, this many likes. I mean, you know, this, I have what, 5,000 likes on Facebook. I'm better than the person with 1,000 likes, or I have this many followers. And how we start in this day and age to really build ourselves and what we do to do that, because we need it, you know, externally, we're turning it outside to that, to make up who we are. So this deep teaching of, without difficulty, can I find peace? Can I find calm? Can I renounce these things, these pleasures that are impermanent, that they're not going to last, that if I don't have a steadiness inside, I'm going to cling to them and it's going to cause me grief and suffering. So I wanted to talk about this because of the renunciation aspect that we've been sharing the last weeks, and also because I think there's a way in our society that we really buy into fame and fortune and glory and material things and praise, that we aspire for it. It's like the great aspiration. And so there's a way where in everything we do, we're holding out for that, and how difficult it is to begin to see that that kind of external aspiration is really the cord, right? It's the cord from the poor little turtle that didn't even know it had been harpooned. It really didn't know. It wasn't trying to lie to the adult. I mean, the thing's sticking out its back and the adult can see. So it doesn't, it's not, it's right there. It's not even, the turtle's not even lying. The turtle believed that. And yet for someone looking, they can see that. And so that is us. We are the little turtle. And we get harpooned and we wonder, like, what's wrong? What's amiss? I don't, you know. And so we practice so that when we go into the places that the little turtle is told not to, we are aware we're going into it. And maybe we come back, or maybe we get more aware of when we get harpooned so we can remove it. Yeah. Or maybe we get aware that we're bringing a lot of stuff with us. Like we're really clinging to something someone said, and it's really dictating really how we're showing up, what we believe. Yeah. And for all of us, we carry a lot of ways that society has told us we're okay and we're not okay. And we're carrying the cord of that. And this practice allows us to begin to identify where is it that we've internalized these oppressions in our mind and bodies. Yeah, as people of color, as female embodied people, as immigrants, as queer people, as people who come from low-income families generationally, of non-English speaking people, of people with different abilities, of different size. Like, how have we internalized the messaging and not noticed it in us, but we're living it, right? We're living it. The cord's there. We know something's not quite right, but we haven't been able to pull it out yet. Yeah. So it's a deep teaching. I invite you to take a look at it. You just Google, you'll come up. And I'm happy also to share it in the email. But I invite us to think about why and how we crave for these kinds of affirmations. And that the affirmations themselves are not terrible. It's just, what do we do with it? And is it the only thing that keeps us believing in our purpose? Because then they become obstructions. So thank you for listening. I invite a sound of the bell. I invite you to close your eyes and let everything fall away. Just put it all down. Come back to your breath. Enjoy this very simple pleasure.